Good morning. The committee will please come to order. Today we convene the first public hearing of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence for the 111th Congress. Before I welcome our new members, I want to remind everybody we're having this hearing today in the what I call the home of Chairman Sonny Montgomery, someone that championed issues for America's veterans, someone that's highly regarded and revered, not just in Congress, but by veterans everywhere. So we are very appreciative to Chairman Filner for allowing us to borrow this very historic hearing room here. With that, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to the new members of this committee, Mr. Smith, Mr. Boren, Ms. Myrick, Mr. Miller, Mr. Klein, and Mr. Conaway. And I'd also like to welcome back to our newly, to our returning members from previous service with the committee, my vice chair, Mr. Hastings, welcome back, and Mr. Blunt as well. Director Blair, welcome this morning. We're pleased that you are here and happy to see you today. We also want to congratulate you on your recent confirmation and wish you well as you go forward under these difficult times that we're facing today as a nation. As the nation's third director of national intelligence, you will be required to continue to refine the role of the DNI and advance the goals of the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act of 2004, while at the same time never losing sight of the threats to our national security. I think we often make reference that this will be much like flying a plane and building it at the same time. So we are definitely prepared to stand with you and support your efforts. Before we get started, I also wanted to thank the director for meeting with members of the committee yesterday in an informal session. Feedback that I have gotten has been very positive, and we intend to do more of those meetings. Being mindful and respectful of the challenge that you face and the time limitations that you have, but we deeply appreciate your willingness to do that. There were a few things about our discussion yesterday that I personally found very encouraging. First, I am pleased, Mr. Director, that you are looking carefully at the situation in Mexico and are in the process of determining whether we need to redouble our efforts in helping President Calderon and the Mexican government deal with threats posed by the drug cartels. Second, I am encouraged that the administration is conducting a comprehensive review of our policy in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And third, I was interested to hear your thoughts on dealing with the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. When discussion turned to what our options might be with respect to closing of Guantanamo Bay, I think it's important to remind everyone that the United States has been capable of detaining and holding terrorists on our soil for many, many years. By way of examples, today the U.S. prison system holds Ramzi Youssef, who is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's nephew, and one of the planners of the first World Trade Center attack. He was captured in Pakistan, extradited to the United States, convicted, and he now sits in a U.S. jail. The U.S. prison system also holds Omar Abdel Rahman, better known as the Blind Sheikh, a participant also in the first World Trade Center attacks, as well as Zacharias Massawi, convicted of participating in the September 11 attacks, also in a U.S. Prison. Ali Salih Khali Almari, who has been labeled an enemy combatant by the Bush administration, has been securely held in a Navy brig. Those are just some of the examples of terrorists that are being held in the United States. Today I'm going to make a few general remarks and then address some specific areas of concern for our nation. This is the third annual threat assessment that I have presided over as chairman of this committee, and we are in a unique position this year. Although the new administration is just over a month old, we have seen some major changes to some of the most controversial issues which impact the intelligence community. President Obama's executive orders on detention and interrogation policies and on Guantanamo Bay represent a significant departure from the previous administration's policies. I know that many of us have strong opinions on what should be done in these critical areas. My intention, though, is to give the president and his new appointees some space to work through these issues as they propose a way forward. However, I think we all recognize that we don't have an unlimited amount of time, so I hope that the executive branch will move quickly on these critical issues. Director Blair, I am also hopeful that you and the new administration will bring about an improved interaction between the executive and legislative branches on intelligence matters. Too often in the past, we've been left in the dark or simply told things too late, or told only part of the story. You heard some of those comments yesterday in the informal session. I am truly optimistic that you will bring positive change in this area as we see our way forward. One thing that will not change in the new administration is the strong character and drive of the men and women of the intelligence community. I have traveled throughout the world, as we mentioned to you yesterday, and have met with our intelligence personnel and have consistently come away impressed by the level of their dedication, their skill, their commitment, and their bravery. I know in talking with you, you intend to spend some time traveling and meeting these same men and women around the world that are doing such critical work for our nation. I hope that as you meet with them, you will deliver to them our message of gratitude, support, and encouragement. In the coming months, we will also be asking you questions about funding and resource needs for the intelligence community. One of the principal functions of our committee is to ensure that the men and women working on the front lines have the tools that they need to combat terrorism and to protect our national security. We look to you for a frank assessment of what those needs may be. With respect to the substance of the threats facing the United States, I'll outline four very basic principles on which I hope we can all agree and will seek your comment on them. First, Al-Qaeda remains a significant threat. Second, American security policy will for years continue to be driven by Iraq and Afghanistan. Third, while we will continue to focus on the hotspots around the globe, we simply cannot forget about growing threats from China, Russia, Iran, and about longstanding problems in Latin America and Africa. And fourth, our nation's cyber infrastructure remains vulnerable to attack. Our intelligence community must be deeply engaged as we respond to these threats. On the subject of Al-Qaeda, I think it is beyond dispute that the last few years have seen expansion of the influence of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in the federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan, a region known as Fatah. This simply, in my opinion, cannot continue. With the freedom to recruit, train, and plot new attacks from the Fatah, new safe havens across the globe continue to grow and emerge. Of particular concern are the expanding Al-Qaeda networks in the Sahel region of North Africa and the emerging and intensifying Al-Qaeda presence in Yemen. The fight against Al-Qaeda is not simply a matter of warfare. We've also got to make progress in countering the extremist ideology. This committee needs to know what has been done to counter the extremist message throughout the world. What threat do we face from radicalization in the homeland? What advances have our allies made in combating this threat? And simply stated, what can we do better to address these threats worldwide? With respect to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, our national interests will be tied to the outcome of these conflicts. Our children and grandchildren will pay the cost of these wars and will either reap the benefits or suffer the consequences of what we do here. The past 2 years have seen some success in Iraq, and thanks to the heroic efforts of our military, intelligence, and diplomatic personnel, we are very grateful for all of their efforts. At the same time, while significant progress has been made in Iraq, we are losing ground to the Taliban and insurgents in Afghanistan, who are now virtually indistinguishable from Al-Qaeda. These terrorists, who have long found sanctuary in the border area between Afghanistan and Pakistan, not only directly threaten U.S. national security, they threaten our allies by insisting on spreading their violent and distorted interpretation of Islam. So as we balance forces from Iraq to Afghanistan, how will we protect the gains in Iraq while stopping the slide in Afghanistan? As I noted at the outset, while we maintain focus on Al-Qaeda and on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, we've also got the rest of the world to worry about. We must continue to focus on the threats posed by state actors such as Iran and North Korea. As we have recently read in the open press, Iran placed its first domestically built satellite in orbit. But the same technology that can launch a satellite and put it in orbit is also useful for launching missiles. Coupled with the possibility of Iran's nuclear ambitions, what is the intelligence community's assessment of this threat? What is the community's assessment of Iran's openness to increase diplomacy and engagement with the United States? Similarly, what progress has been made in the efforts to disarm North Korea? And what more needs to be done in both these critical and vital areas of the world? Russia continues to pose challenges to our country. It has engaged in an aggressive foreign policy designed to provide an alternative to the United States and has positioned itself as a counter to U.S.-led international efforts. Through its military offensive in Georgia last summer, as well as its continuing intelligence efforts around the globe, Russia shows that it remains a threat to U.S. interests and our allies. Do we have, Director Blair, our intelligence resources adequately deployed to deal with this resurgence from Russia? In the last Congress, I expressed my desire for the intelligence community to focus on areas that had long been neglected in favor of other high-priority issues. Latin America and Africa come to mind. We previously believed that threats from these regions to be much less urgent, but they continue to have the potential to seriously threaten core U.S. national security interests and will continue to grow in scope and severity. The security of the United States is directly affected by events in these important places. Like many people on the southwest border of the United States, I am specifically concerned about the increase in violence and drug trafficking coming from Mexico. How has President Calderon managed this issue, and how will it affect the security of the United States? Colombia's long-term efforts to bring terrorism and narco-trafficking under control have had great success, yet Colombia continues to be the primary source of cocaine entering the United States. How can we help the Colombian government move forward? Africa-based terrorist groups such as Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda have grown in influence and capability. How will we address these threats, especially when our resources are stretched so thin elsewhere? Finally, a word about cybersecurity. It is only in the past couple of years that we have really begun to appreciate the threat to our cyber infrastructure. This is a problem of enormous proportions, and I want you to know that we intend to work with you to address this vital and important national security asset from an intelligence perspective. There are a host of other concerns that I could address, but such as the ongoing conflict in Israel, the threat of WMD proliferation, and the security impact of the global economic crisis. I will leave those subjects for the question period and conclude by reiterating my thanks to the brave men and women of our nation's intelligence community. And I want them to know that as chairman of this committee, I am reminded on a daily basis of their sacrifices as I look for our work here to be worthy of their commitment and their efforts. I trust and hope that you will consider us your partners in this effort. So I look forward to a productive hearing this morning and a productive Congress. And now I'd like to recognize our ranking member, Mr. Hoekstra, for any opening statement that he may wish to make.